Love is like a river. Got to keep up with the flow. Up, down, around everything. Love goes where it's got to go. Love knows where it's got to go. I travel at the speed of love, and I'm moving to the beat of my
You have been listening to Travel at the Speed of Love, music and lyrics by Win Free, sung by Rowan Mastandreas.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to BBS Radio. You're listening to the Dream Path Show, and I am your co-host, Geraldine. And the host of this amazing project that we call Dream Path is Dennis Joseph Jester. Well, it's been a rather strange week. We're having Winfrey as a guest on the show tonight. I was trying to get emails out to everyone that I knew, and I couldn't believe the difficulty I was going through with being considered spam. I'm not going to question any further on whether it's just me. I think it's everywhere. Win Free, he's co-host on one of the other BBS radio shows, the Win and Dawn Show. That's on every Saturday night on Station 1. He is a poet, a musician, an author, and he has a lot to talk to us about. You might know him for being the author of Confessions from My Girlfriend, Volume 1 and 2.
Oh, hold it there. We're in the wrong timeline here.
It's coming out in 2010. Yeah. I do apologize. I'm going to sign off here, and I'm going to let my host and brother and lover of humanity, Mr. Dennis Joseph Jester.
When free, as free as the wind blows, as long as my hair grows, and you're wind free.
Remember, it's mainly through osmosis that all life comes through, okay? So wake up, you guys. Just, smell the coffee and all that stuff. Good. Okay, cut. Next.
Okay, are you guys going to get Win on the show? You're fooling around too much.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I am actually about to call Winfrey. It's... But I'm sensing interference here, but I'm getting back to it again. Yes, I'm about to call Winfrey again, and it feels good. It's something I can't even explain, so I'll say no more, and I'll just get on with it. I'm picking up the phone. and I'm dialing in to get him, and I almost don't know what to say right now at this time. I'm just so excited. Hopefully he answers the phone.
Hello.
Oh, it sounds like we have the dolphins here. This is Winfrey?
Yes.
Oh, good. It sounds like there's a party going on there.
A bunch of dolphins?
Yeah.
So here we are.
I don't know. You know, what I did is I walked to the Starbucks in downtown L.A. and from Terry's place.
Well, that's okay. Yeah, that's good.
Perfect.
You know, Jara, this is all a very extraordinary experience, and that it pushes the limits of anyone's credulousness that I'm having this experience. And so, it's like, as long as I know I'm doing that, I have to make my best attempt to be credible. And to give reasons to people why it's important, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, otherwise they just, they do it anyway. I mean, it's just like, it goes in one ear and out the other. I mean, it's a lot of responsibility for me to handle. And if someone else takes it seriously, the responsibility then becomes shared. Who wants responsibility in today's world? No one. So the way to avoid the responsibility is to, you know, not hear it, not to take it in. To say, this isn't really happening, or this guy is, I don't know what he's doing, he's got his shtick. And so, playing the channelings, there's a couple channelings there. One of them, and I don't, you should have heard these channelings at one point or another. One of them was the Elohim first introduction to the conference call. I mean, you will be floored at the power of, I mean, this is a group that's been repeating itself in our history, and they start off, we've waited a long time to do this and to be here, and we are so pleased to be talking to you. And then they describe who they are and how they operate.
We presently speak to you from the Council of Twelve, the Oversoul Council of our solar system. Have you questions for us this evening? We are indeed very, very pleased to have this opportunity presented to us for such dissemination of light to so many who can serve and uplift their fellow humans. We take this as a grave responsibility and huge honor. Have you queries for us at this time?
I'll ask a question on the behalf of all those people who are listening. And each person individually wants to know how they can participate in their own life in the best way for the upliftment of this planetary process. Could you share that, please?
Go to the source. Go to the center. Go to what is in your heart. We are trained here in this Western culture especially to ignore the promptings, the intuitive pleadings, the emanations, the heart. Some call it the intuition, the gut instinct. This is almost always correct. We are too rationalistic a culture, too intellectualized a culture. Not that the mental is negative, but the mental, and thus the ego, is to serve the soul, not to be master of the soul. Right now, we are struggling within a third-dimensional structure that is enslaved by rules, rules which serve the ego. The ego dominates world politics, world business, oppression, mercenary war, not the heart. As leaders such as the Dalai Lama have said, strive for compassion for all, for harmlessness for all. For in the end, we are all the same. We all cry. We all hurt. We all need love. We all need food. We all need shelter. We all need each other. Look at your disaster here in the United States. Look at Katrina. Look at what happens when suddenly a natural catastrophe takes away the very existence of life, the technologies which we have come to rely on as the most concrete. They are not the most concrete. Physical things are not the most concrete. It is what is in the soul and how we treat others. This indeed is the most concrete. And we will continue to manifest these lessons as long as we are intolerant of others, because others are only aspects of ourselves. The more quickly we can accept ourselves and our own imperfections, the more quickly we can harmonize with others of different dispositions and understand that differences, like colors, like musical tones, like different plates on a table, different delicacies, are to be savored for their differences, not to be juxtaposed and judged one against another. There is room for multitude and plentitude. Variety is a good thing, not bad. We must learn to rejoice and see beauty in variety.
It's Daphne channeling. And then there's another channeling.
What I'm really piques my interest at this point in time is the radiant zone.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're doing right now.
Uh-huh. Well, every Monday, that's only part of what I'm doing in my service. Overview here.
Yeah.
Is it I am an impresario? Is that the right word, John?
Impresario.
A what?
Impresario.
Yes.
Yes.
It's kind of like I'm the guy with the top hat and the cigar saying, and we now introduce the Council of Elohim, and we now introduce Matthew, you know?
Well, obviously, you're holding space for all this to happen.
I'm holding the space for this to happen. And so, I tell you, if you listen to the channeling of the Elohim's introduction, the thing about it is, every time that channeling is played, they're coming into the space. And that's no small potatoes. Every time Matthew channels, I believe the Ra group is coming into the space.
The speed of love.
The speed of love?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of your songs, isn't it?
Yeah. It's also the name of our movie at this point.
Well, then it might be a secret introduction.
Winmovie.com.
Oh, right. Okay. Winmovie.com.
Did you listen to that? That's where Barry Morrow, I have a 10-minute audio file with Barry Morrow and Matthew Hart endorsing my movie project, with Terry talking, with Daphne talking. You know?
Now, how much of the movie do you want exposed?
Well, I would just say we're converting it to a... I'm not going to tell the story of the movie, but we're converting it to a movie, a major movie story. You know, as soon as I mentioned Barry Morrow and the fact that he's known me for 5 years and looked at my story and knows that it's real, or at least knows that I'm making nothing up is a big thing for credibility.
Right. One of the things about any story, though, is how it communicates to people.
Right.
And trying to find the credibility of it is not as important as telling the story itself.
Well, telling the story, then I tell the story of my girlfriends and how this happened.
In the movie, yes.
Yeah, I know. You know, the movie is going to be different. The movie is going to look like a fantasy.
Good.
We've taken the story and we've turned it into a... We've taken the real story and converted it into a drama. So we push... You know, it's not meant to tell the exact story.
It's meant to provoke.
Be very entertaining.
Yeah.
But the implication will be, and it'll say at the end, this is based on real events that happened in my life. You know, the idea is, and, you know, the key, as I've learned the key from Ra, the key is to make people reach, to make people curious, to make them interested, to make them say, I better read about that guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or I better read his book. But you can't, you have to do that indirectly. You know, you can't directly do it or people resist. I mean, it would be like me calling you up and saying, Jara, my name is Winfrey, and I'm talking to the Elohim, and they're a group soul. They can come into your space energetically, and they're in my space. And if you pay attention to me, you can connect with them.
Well, yeah. there's quite a few energies out there that like to do it that way. And,
yeah.
And, you know, follow me, and everything will be okay.
Yeah.
And really... What's being said here is that each individual needs, if they so desire, to find their own particular truth.
Now, you know, this all should be on tape. Do you know that?
Well...
Everything we're saying now is a natural interchange, so why don't you just start your tape recorder and we'll just talk.
Well, guess what, Wynn?
We've been taping the whole thing.
Everything's being recorded from the start.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
So, I mean, on the overview here is for the past 7 years, starting with the writing of my book, I started to develop an awareness of dimensions beyond this one. And I started to develop an awareness of how these, the highest, what I believe to be the highest and the most expansive forces in these other dimensions interface with this realm. And they want to interface, but they need a human or many humans to interface with. And humans can't find them normally because we can't see those realms. Neither can I. I can't see those realms directly. But then I had all these circumstances that forced me to act like a detective and say, can this be real? Can they be who they say they are? And I spent initially quite a bit of effort cross-referencing, looking for correlative material on the internet, looking for other people that might be having a similar or correlative experience, comparing the messages they were getting to the messages I was getting. I started experimenting with the fact, well, if they are who they say they are, and they can help recreate matrices from their side in a human, how would that manifest? How would that work? And then, of course, there was the amazing experience where my sister was going to die, and I asked them if they could help, and they said they would. And she had this miraculous, she's had a cancer operation, which was supposed to be critical and highly probably fatal. And she survived the operation. And this was in the first, this was in 2002. And I said, is this coincidence? I asked them to help. They said they would. And that she survived this operation, which she wasn't supposed to survive. And shortly thereafter, she had to go in for tests to see if the cancer had returned. And the nurse said, there's no cancer, but there's something wrong with your test because we can't measure your lupus, and lupus never disappears. So they tested her again and again, and her lupus disappeared from the map of her test. And so later, I asked another question, and I asked them, how did you do that? And they said, it was like putting a filter in her blood and taking out the lupus. Well, I have a source that's talking to me that can do things like that. So I wanted to know, how could this benefit other people? How can other people have access to this? How can people draw on this for their own healing? And then I started doing my conference call, and I started doing it every Monday, and I was an experiment to see what would happen. And the people that were coming in on the conference calls, I mean, just a few at first, were having dramatic things happen in their lives. They would send the light somewhere, and something would shift, and some of them looked like coincidence, and some of them seemed like they couldn't have been coincidence. So, you know, we've been doing the conference call now for almost 2 years, and recently I met Matthew Edwards in Fairfax, and Matthew was a channel, is a channel, and he was bringing through this immense wisdom from a source that he just called his source, or the spirit of the moment. And then I asked my sources, who is Matthew channeling? And they said, he's channeling part of the rock group. And in the cosmology that I've uncovered, there are two major group souls that are the main influences at the highest level on our planet. And one of them is the Ra group, and one of them is the Elohim group. And the Ra group is composed of graduates of this realm, souls that have gone through physical human embodiment and gone through thousands of lifetimes, perhaps, and eventually got off the wheel of reincarnation, not only from the Earth planet, but from other planets and other star systems. And all these energies team up, team together, and help planetary populations at lower levels of evolution on their path. So the Ra group has been one of those sources that has been intervened and been seen as God throughout our history, if I have it right. And then the other source is the Elohim group, which is composed also of millions or billions of individual souls, but these souls have never come into human embodiment. They're outside of time, and they operate as a guiding beacon from outside this realm, beaming into it. And so the two of these group souls together have been, in the various history of humankind, who we have thought of as God. And the Ra group tends to have more wisdom of the obstacles that someone goes through in this realm to get out of this realm. And the Elohim group seems to have more power because they can beam in and readjust matrices for an individual to help them change patterns that they have been carrying with themselves for many, many lifetimes. So the Wednesday night channeling with Matthew, as you know, because you've been listened in and you've asked the question and you've had your own experience, goes directly to this huge wisdom of what a person's issues are in terms of being stuck in this realm. And the amazing thing is that both group souls can energetically connect with someone who asks, but they don't violate free will. So someone has to ask. And part of what I see my job is to create the reality of this for people so that people can tune into these energies and ask for help, both for themselves, for the people they love, and for the planet as a whole. And that's really why I started the conference calls.
The egg, when it first cracks, provides a slow entry into the world for the emerging infant bird. This is purposeful. For the process of breaking out of the egg actually prepares the bird for life outside the egg. The planet is an egg. This group is an egg. Your life, your personality is an egg. All of these things are preparing for transformation through birth into action in an expanded form. We hold each other's hands, look around circle. We see the other aspects of ourselves, creating, guiding, contributing their function, like enzymes in an alchemical formation. We create group opportunities. And the birth of the collective conscience, the action which can and will come from groups, make an entirely new landscape become prevalent on the face of the earth. Nations which have formed identity based on separateness will now begin to dissipate. Categories, separations, borders are melting so that unity can be restored. It is possible, and it will be evident, that identity, both group identity and individual identity, can be based in connection rather than separation or distinction from others. Rather, we will come to see that those entities which create themselves through connecting rather than through discriminating will be the entity can serve time. So it is the inclusive formation, the shape which invites and includes, which can now serve changes which must occur as we accelerate and involve ourselves in further transformation here on Earth.
So, Jar, you had an experience on the Wednesday night call with Matthew. How did you connect with it?
When I heard the message live, there was a lot of emotion. It was difficult to look at my own perfection, oddly enough. I think over the days, it was something that is still evolving at this very moment of where I have taken that reading and put it on a path that excites me right now. And applying the wisdom from that reading in my daily life. I am receiving a lot of insights. I am seeing a lot of roads simultaneously at one time. And a lot of the opaqueness, the blindness in my world is slowly but surely being penetrated. I was told that there was a hole, an opening, and it could be the smallest in nature, but if I was drawn to it, to follow it, and that's what I'm doing right now. I really love how everything is opening up, and I'm not just talking about the holy side of life, the shadow side, but to see them standing side by side and seeing neither as a threat or my salvation. So I guess to put it in simple terms, I am stepping into my own personal power, also setting up boundaries of how far I will go without looking to another path again. It's new and it's strange. It's I don't know if we've gone through another gateway recently or what. Yeah, my life is changing.
You know, I know that a lot of times when people are exposed to my work and they hear the kind of story I just told, it scares them, because the fear seems to be that if you really acknowledge these two group souls as real, then maybe they might take your power. And of course, in the history of mankind, when they've intervened in this realm, even though it was not their intent to take people's power, people would just say, take my power, tell me what to do. And people were not in the level of evolution to be able to handle the interface with these energies and maintain their power as well. And so they would do things like give religious precepts or love your neighbor as yourself. And, you know, love your neighbor as yourself is not something to do out of obligation. It's not something to do because some force on the other side says, love your neighbor as yourself. It's something to do out of an actual empathetic connection with your neighbor, where that you actually perceive them as part of yourself. And in which case, you're compelled to do what you can to add to their own life, but not out of duty or obligation. Sometimes loving your neighbor as yourself means leaving them alone. It's like this, your personal discernment still is tantamount with all of this. And there's no rules here to blindly follow. It's really a matter of expanding your own matrix energy so that your energy is no longer just you, but it's me, and it's him, and it's her. And you start to directly perceive everyone as part of your energy. In which case, you're now operating from the collective consciousness as opposed to your individual consciousness. And you're going back and forth because you're still a human. You still have your individual life. You still have to your own bank account, your own bed to sleep in, your own home. So you're moving back and forth during the course of your day from your individual personal life to your cosmic life. That's how I see it.
Sometimes the people, they read the books in order to get the smarts. But until they unlock the words from their heads, they're never gonna find their hearts. Sometimes the people, they look at the sky, all they see is clouds. But you know, Mr. Sunshine, he'd be peeping through the cracks if only he was allowed to dig the spaces. You know what I mean? Dig the spaces. Things just ain't what they seem. Some people like the donut, some people like the hole. Some people want your body, and the rest they want your soul. And the atom that's got these electrons going round the nucleus, it was Mr. Einstein, he taught us. In quantum mechanics, he said, you gotta dig the spaces. You know what I mean? Gotta dig the spaces. Things just ain't what they seem. Some people's minds are burning, they're looking for a riot. But my mind is like a vacuum, it just wants some peace and quiet. Some people like the words of this song, some people like the rhythm. But if you're looking for the truth, gonna find it in between them. Yes, you gotta seem spaces. You know.
However, the everyday life can be very cosmic in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And when we begin to recognize that that is going on, even in the most boring moments, or seemingly boring drudgery moments, things open up even then. And this is what's happening. This is what's... I think a number of us are allowing ourselves to experience this kind of energy to different degrees. what is happening with your work, at least, you know, when I feel it, is that it works with everyone, and it works with the individuals at the same time. Quite often, the messages that are coming through for one person who asks a question often applies to someone who's reading it 3 or 4 days later.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good that you're posting some of this information as well that people can reach and get through the radiantzone.com and begin to experience it and join in on the conferences if they, you know, they feel that this would be beneficial. And the only way to know is to actually experience it, because it is a subtle, although it is powerful, it's like, oh, here's this radio program, people are talking about things, someone's bringing through some energy, some of the information is really interesting, but at the same time something else is going on that you can feel, that you sense in a part of yourself that is giving, answering, that is communicating to something that's really important to you right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more this happens, the more it expands, and the more we begin to feel that the people that who are within our sphere are wonderful ambassadors. It's good that you're doing this. It's good that you're holding the energy. More and more people I'm recognizing, too, are doing the same thing, in the sense that without trying to do it, without going, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to save the world, because you're not going to save the world. It's more of an attitude for oneself. That's where the humility comes in. That's where the recognition comes in. And quite often, that's where laughter and joy and having fun comes into play as well. So all these different factors. Quite often, you do bring in the humorous side of things in your day-to-day travels with people. Your music. Music is something that has been really important. Poetry. Some of the poetry that you have written is a beautiful example of that energy, even though it was written years and years ago. It has that essence to it. And so for me, the experience is Winfrey is bringing through a number of different things. As you say, is what was the word we were using? not the ambassador, but the although it could be an ambassador of all these different elements that are interplaying with each other.
Yes. Early in my life, when I would think of terms like enlightenment or cosmic consciousness, because I was brought up in the days of psychedelic stuff and went through that myself, I would think that someday that would happen for me, and suddenly I wouldn't have human problems anymore. I would be walking around and I'd be like a walking glow worm, and I would be enlightened. And I realize that that's a model that, at least from my own experience, is not quite accurate, because you never lose your humanness. You never lose the needs of your body, the need to eat, the need for companionship, the need for love, the need for sex. They're real needs, and they're part of the animal side. And that in the quest for higher consciousness, it still has to incorporate your human side. Because if you try to deny your human side rebels and cuts your energy off. That's my experience for myself, you know. And of course, everyone has a different human side. And so they have different human side issues to deal with. Some people need more of this and less of that. But nonetheless, I think it was Shakespeare who said, to thine own self be true, which means to me, while you're working on your higher expanded consciousness, you still have to be compassionate to your humanness. Mm-hmm. Because if you deny it, you won't make your higher stuff work very well. I mean, I know a lot of my songs and poems revolved around my human type issues of love and loss and rejection and worthiness and things that everyone goes through. So I guess one of the reasons that they're using me in this position of kind of an emissary for these energies on the other side, one of the reasons is because I am so human and that I never let, I don't say never, but in general, I don't let the fact that I'm doing these other things get in the way of being human. Mm-hmm. I try not to. And, you know, it's a huge responsibility to do this, and I have to even forget the responsibility and just do it and let it be, because if I start thinking in terms of responsibility, it scares me. It scares me, like, how could I ever do this job right, or be, how could I be worthy of this? So...
Yeah, and having some days where you're thinking to oneself, I don't know anything. How can I possibly talk about anything at all when I feel completely dumbfounded by what's going on?
Right.
And then
exactly. Yeah, I'm sitting here watching my own movie at the same time as being the leading player in it, and you know, I kind of learn things. I know when I first started talking to the Elohim, and I started to get the idea, geez, maybe they are who they say they are. First, I wasn't sure. I mean, just because a voice comes out of your girlfriend and says, we're the Council of Elohim, and then I look the word up, and that comes up with the creator God of this realm, the God of the Old Testament, I said, how do I know they're really that? I didn't. They're saying they're that. And I had already done enough study of the David Wilcock material and the raw material in the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce to realize that there were huge negative forces in these other realms that could channel and come through and could masquerade as positive forces and could, you know, with the idea of disabling people who had a positive, role they were trying to unfold. And so I had that question. I said, could this be something negative and it's trying to, you know, derail me from the work I'm doing with the book, the incarnation book, the Edgar Cayce?
Right.
And I had to, you know, test it for a long period of time. You know, and they never lectured to me. They never said, here's what you're supposed to do, or you're supposed to do this. They just said, ask us questions, and that it was all unfold over time. And so that's what I did. I just asked questions about everything, and it was like having access to this cosmic library of data that I would imagine is really rare in this realm to have these kinds of answers. And in the initial stages, when I was asking questions, one of the first things I asked about was the premises of my book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. Now, in the book, aside from fairly well proving that Edgar Cayce's back in the world, there was the introduction of the voice that was speaking through David Wilcock that identified themselves as the Ra group. And even when I started studying David's channelings, I said, can they really be who they say they are? And I realized that this group's soul was identifying themselves as, they didn't say it outright. They do not want people to worship them or put them on pedestals. But very clearly, within the context of the channelings, is they were the intelligence that was the beginning of all the religions on our planet and the spiritual movements, and that I kept saying, as I was writing the book, can this be true? Can I be bringing forth the current messages of an intelligence? Is this vast? And then they're talking about the dimensional shift and the splitting of souls and ascension. And I'm asking myself, I don't know this, I'm saying, I don't know if this is true. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is real. I can validate the wisdom. I can validate the connection with Edgar Cayce and David Wilcock. But then it goes into all this stuff with the cosmology of this dimensional shift. And so 2 years into writing the book, I'm having conversations with Daphne. And I'm asking, aside from these phenomena, like where they predicted a newspaper headline and saved my sister's life, which was actually that all happened in the first 6 months, I'm asking all the questions about the cosmology of the book and who the Ra group is, and I'm asking them for their explanation of it, and they're giving me exactly the same information that was in the book. And Daphne did not know those answers. So this was like giving me goosebumps to have this second validation for this cosmology that is so out there.
I've been learning lately what love really means, how to give myself to you, leave behind the schemes, wondering how much I was gonna win, gonna lose. All the golden fortnights just won't cure the blues. But when you give more than you take, I really do believe, when you give more than you take, you get just what you need. When you give more than you take, it comes back at its own speed, and you find the real joy in you. I've been learning lately, the rewards don't always come that you're giving to someone. And if you're sitting and you're waiting for the giving to return, the strings you're holding on to gonna get your fingers burned. But when you give more than you take, I really do believe, when you give more than you take, it comes back and it's so sweet. When you give more than you take, you get just I've acted out of selfishness, though I didn't know much better. Yes, I do know now. Everything I do will come back to me somehow. But when you give more than you take, I really do believe, when you give more than you take, you get just what you need. When you give more than you take, it comes back at its own speed, and you'll find the real joy.
Let me tell you what it was really like at that time.
Right.
That here I was with Daphne, and I had this incredible love for this woman who was this delicate hothouse flower. And she was used to being taken care of, pampered, didn't work. And suddenly, she left her secure environment to be with me. And she was freaking out. She was having panic attacks. She was waking up in the middle of the night screaming. She was cursing her decision to be with me. And I'd say, but you know, I think what we're doing is really important. And she says, I think you're a megalomaniac. I don't think anything like that could happen through me. I think I'm making it up. And so, you know, at the time I was dragging her around to street fairs, and you know, this was something that was so foreign to her. She was like royalty, aristocracy, and I'm like a bloody street person, and I'm trying to integrate all of this. And then we go to sleep, and she would say, those guys want to talk to you again. I'm having these conversations. And, you know, if you ever go back and read those channelings, I mean, I'm asking them, what do I do about this? She doesn't take it seriously. She's going through all this pain. How do I fix this? And there's a huge amount of conversations we had where they were explaining it to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, they said Daphne was an outpost messenger, and she was actually an Elohim soul, a very high Elohim soul, who had come into this realm to try to help it maybe millions of years ago. And she got caught up, like we all do, in the miasms and the shadow side of this realm. And meeting me was like provoking all the shadow stuff in her to come forward, and it was almost killing her. And it was also bringing my shadow stuff up. I mean, there's no way at that time that I could be as relaxed in talking about this as I am now. I didn't even have a clue how to talk about it. Yeah. And so for the first 6 months, I'm having this dual experience of having the woman that I recognized was an ancient connection, and yet she was hating me half the time. And I'm talking to this voice through her that says they're the Council of Elohim, and I'm trying to figure it out. It's like a huge cosmic puzzle saying, you know, if I'm really talking to the Elohim, why don't they just fix everything? That's what I thought.
Right, yeah, come you know, on.
Just make it right. Make her be relaxed. Make somebody give us money so that I can take care of her. And that's not how they operate.
Yeah, we noticed.
Yeah, I asked them one time, I said, listen, you know, they predicted a newspaper headline in advance at the very beginning when I tested them. And I said, could you do this? How do I know she's not making it up? So then they predicted a headline and said, watch for this headline in 2 weeks. And 2 weeks later, there was the headline. So later on, I said, couldn't you guys help me in the horse races? I mean, you know, a little bit of money would make this relationship go a lot further. And they said that that would take me back into patterns of previous lifetimes, which were not in the best interest of what my highest role would be this lifetime. And I can see that. I mean, let's just suppose, for example, in that period of time, I won the lottery, and because they told me the numbers. Let's just say that happened. I can see how that would be a screw-up to this work, because it would make people look at a connection with the Elohim and saying, oh, help us win the lottery, or when it's so lucky, we're not so lucky. So I have to be an example of struggling through things in an ordinary way so that everyone knows that they can struggle through things in an ordinary way and get through it. If they created some kind of phenomena like that for me, then I'd be the wrong example. I'd say, he's lucky. We can't do what he does. He's talking to the Elohim, and he just won the lottery. So then they'll be sending me emails saying, Wynn, can you help us with the lottery? Can you see that from your point of view?
It's saying that we have to do the work. You know, I sense more and more we are here as the connector points, the place where this can actualize. And the only way it can actualize is if we actualize it. If we, it's not necessarily even figuring it out. It's just doing the things that we know we need to do at the time. Sometimes we don't even know, and it's just like what you were saying. I mean, here you are doing this work. It's quite amazing, but all these other things are happening in your life that's saying, you're crazy. But at the same time, it's not crazy. It's more important than anything else.
Yes. You know what? The way that they can help in terms of abundance, for example, is that they can help create synchronicities through meeting somebody, through... See, the way this realm uplifts is through the co-creation of human beings on this level. It's not through following anyone's orders. It's not through becoming a blind follower, because there's no co-creation in being a blind follower. It's, you know, when human beings come together out of free will and they say, let's do this, and then they do it for a very high purpose, not for just making money or just for becoming famous, but they never lose the intent of their purpose, and they come together for the high purpose, there's a magic energy that occurs that uplifts everything. And if we look throughout our history, we can see those times when that magic happened and it impacted everything around those people that were co-creating. And we can look at Jesus as an example of someone co-created with his disciples. But you can also look at the Beatles as an example of a group of guys that, even in spite of the fact that they were making oodles of money, in spite of the fact that they were world famous, held their group intention really high for perhaps longer than any other group in the history of Western music. And their music, everything about them was infectious. Their movies were infectious. You couldn't help but have an uplifted heart and a good feeling around everything the Beatles did. And so when you hold that co-creative energy, you are now operating in a very, I think it is, high state, as an interactive state that attracts things to you. And that is the natural way for abundance to occur in this realm.
Yes, yes,
Not through some kind of magic gold ingot that gets thrown in from the Elohim realm and say, here, when you need some money. Okay? Because you see, by creating relationships that actually are co-creative, those relationships become examples to other people energetically of how to do that. And it gives everyone else the clues of how to do it in their own relationships, because they learn by example. And there's very few examples of that for people to identify with in this realm. Now, I have to say, on my conference call, and it's not even my conference call, on the conference call that I do every night, I have a group of people on that call that are doing this kind of co-creative energy in this realm. Now, it didn't happen at first. At first, I was kind of like holding the vision of that. But over a period of time, they started reaching towards each other. They started helping each other. They started calling each other. When somebody was in trouble, they were like helping that person. And they developed a rapport between them outside of me. And, I had that as an image. I said, this is too big. I can't be focused on me, because if I die tomorrow, then it stops. So other people have to make the connection with each other. And that is, you know, that's one of the trickiest things to be able to learn in this realm, how to have co-creative connections with people based on the highest of purposes. I even have co-creative relationships based on lower purposes, but they don't act in the same way. Like a bunch of guys can get together and say, let's go rob a bank. And they can be palsy and they can be friends, and then as soon as the money's there, they start fighting over it.
Yeah.
So they lose the energy. You see, when a relationship is based on anything in this realm, then it's a high interaction, which it can be. It probably won't endure over a long period of time, because it's connected to the accomplishment of something in the physical. When a relationship is based on a planetary purpose, the upliftment of the planet, truly, not just in your mind, but you realize that's actually what you're doing, you now have a purpose that's not based on anything physical, which means the relationship will endure beyond this realm. And that is the trick. But most people, they won't do anything unless they can say, what am I getting out of this? And if they can't see what they're getting out of it, they keep looking for the relationships that specifically have something to gain in the relationship. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. The way, you know, so many different, when you're talking there, I could think of a number of instances in my life where, getting groups together, working with individuals, working with those individuals in a group effort, watching it start and blossom, seeing something that's truly miraculous happening from it, and then suddenly something changes. And what is that? Well, why did it change like that? Well, once again, it's like the true essence of what that group was really intended to do. We talk about ego, we talk about all kinds of different things, or the dark side entering and so on, but really it's just our own humanness, where something good is happening and we want to grab onto it and keep it for ourselves, and the heck with everyone else.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've observed is this idea of service to self and service to others.
Right.
And, you know, many people use those words and I don't sense that they really get it. okay? It's like the service to others is the good guys, service to self is the bad guys, and we want to be the good guys, so we are a service to others. But oftentimes they're saying that, and right underneath it, their energy is really service to self.
Right.
And the deal is, it's a very subtle thing, and that has to do with the fact that as humans, we all need from other people. We do have needs. We need energy. And energy is something which can make you high. It's like entertainers who go in front of a stage. They get addicted to be on stage. They're addicted to the energy of the audience focused on them. It's a huge high. And most people don't have enough energy coming towards them.
Right.
And they're hungry for it. So what happens is when they get some energy flowing towards them, immediately, and they don't do this on a conscious level, but immediately they try to trap the energy. Because they said, oh, I got some now. I don't want it to go away.
Right.
And in the trying to trap the energy, are abrogating free will. You see, we can have all the energy we want, but when it comes from free will, in which case people choose to give it to us, and we choose to give it to them, and there's no manipulation or trapping, it never goes away. It endures. It's
right.
Free.
Right.
But on the lower levels, service to self, as I see it, is really... my battery's going dead.
Uh-oh.
You are listening to Dream Path on BBS Radio. We're just going to take a small station break, and we'll be right back with our guest, Winfrey. We would like to take this moment to thank our sponsor, Creo Monday. Their motto, think it, feel it, create it. Create your own universe. Through the concept of the power of words, changing the world one body at a time. Creo Monday. A positive way of being. Here to inspire you. www.creomonday.com. CreoMundi. Check it out today.
The importance of free will and how all of us, including myself, I'm not going, you know, looking in the course of my life, how I have been lonely or hungry or, you know, afraid, and I manipulated someone's energy to try to be pointed towards me. I think it happens by one of the worst cases or most easiest cases where we're tempted is in a relationship where somebody finds this empty space in their self, starts to get healed at the beginning stages of a relationship, and it feels really great. And then they think that if they possess the person, that they will always have that feeling, and that as they to possess the person, the feeling starts to go away. And then people wonder, what happened to the romance? What happened to the great part of our relationship? And in a worst-case scenario, somebody will really try to totally manipulate and control the person to have them do what they want through sexual interchange, through a guy saying he doesn't want his wife to work because he's afraid if... she works, she'll leave him because she'll be independent, so he wants her to be dependent. And these are so common patterns that keep the energy kind of constricted in this realm. Whereas if people came together in a relationship and let it come together out of free will, the energy wouldn't get lost. The romance wouldn't die. It would always be there because that's the nature. A free will allows the energy to be reborn every moment. And in a relationship, that's what makes ongoing love, experiencing the energy of the moment being reborn. The group souls, one of the interesting things, that I believe this was in the Ra group through Carla Rucker, the Ra group was saying that the negative can't really be group souls that exist for long periods of time because they won't stay together for a high purpose. Essentially, they compete for the energy, and one is trying to be on the top of the heap. I've noticed on our conference calls, and this is where I've had to, the area where occasionally I have to come in as an enforcer, and that is we have a very loving energy on the calls. And occasionally someone new will come in that feels that energy, and they think they have all this stuff to offer us, and they try to take the energy and point it towards themselves. And they're not doing this even knowing that they're doing it.
Right.
It's a very subtle thing. This is what you're doing. This is how groups get screwed up. When you start to get that beautiful energy present in a group, somebody has to hold the vision to make sure that doesn't happen. And to have some kind of enforcement to prevent it, because the nature of people is when there's a beautiful energy, somebody's going to come in and try to point that energy on themselves to heal their own loneliness and their own pain. Mm-hmm. And they will destroy the energy of the entire group if that's allowed to continue.
Well, that's why I find it interesting and a very good point that in each of your calls, you have people in locations around the country that are holding the energy.
And I thought of that when I was starting my conference calls, and I said, well, you know, that is a really good model to do a conference call where people could pick up the energy, and then as it got expansive, they could initiate their own call and do the format, and it could replicate by itself without focusing on a leader. I hope it leaves a model, so even in the future, if phone lines break down or internet breaks down, there's a model of how people can get together and invoke these high energies no matter what, whether on a conference call or in a living room or a coffee shop, because the energies are always there. But just by asking, they will come in. But the conference line is a model that creates how to, I should say, by asking with the right intent. Just, if you just open your mouth and say it, there may not be the intent there. So you need to become familiar enough with the energies to know that they are with you and you can invoke them.
Now, if someone listening to this wants to get in and discover more about the conference calls, what would you say to them right now is the best way to connect with that and find out more about how they can be a part of it?
Well, we have a website dedicated, started out with the idea of being dedicated to the conference calls, and it's higher-vision.org, higher-vision.org, and that has a listing of the conference calls. We don't put the phone number on the website for our weekly calls, because don't want people to be anonymous checking into it. We're creating a group energy, so people have to ask for the phone number, and there's an email where they can ask. If somebody wants to check it out and be anonymous and doesn't want to ask for the phone number, on Monday nights, the conference call is actually broadcast live on BBS Radio, Monday at 6 o'clock. So you can listen to our Monday call at 6 o'clock. And that's the one that I personally moderate. And it's kind of anything can happen on a Monday night. We have had live Elohim channelings. I've played tapes of channelings. And sometimes I just talk. And then on Wednesday night, we have the conference call with Matthew, and that's where we do have a live channeling every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific time, and you can get the information on this conference call from www.theradiantzone.com. The Radiant Zone. Be sure to include the word "dark."
Code H-E.
Previous channelings up there, so you can listen to them, you can tune into the energy. But the weekly calls are co-creative. They're not just entertaining. They're not just me talking to you. People put things in the light. People do their own group meditations during the week. And the amazing thing is I don't own this energy. It's available, and the people on the calls are picking up the energy of these group souls and learning how to invoke them. And once you learn that, you've got it. It has nothing to do with me anymore. I've had one person, at least that I know of, that started coming into our conference calls, and he called me up and said, "Wim, an amazing thing happened. After your conference call, my girlfriend started the channel, and the voice said they were the Elohim." And then he played me a little bit of the conversation he had, and it sounded like the Elohim. I mean, I would never assume that it was because somebody says it. So then later I asked the question in my own conference, in one of my own channelings, so was he really connecting with you guys? And they said, yes, he was. So they want to connect with people. And I'm just being like the guy that's throwing a pebble into the sea. And if you start connecting with the energies of the calls, you may not get your girlfriend talking to you, but you will definitely, if you're doing it on an ongoing basis, I won't say definitely, I'll say most people are having a shift in their lives, a shift in their relationships, a change of energy of how it feels to be them, and a feeling of knowingness that they're being watched by these major energies on the other side, and those energies are with them. And that is, you know, a major accomplishment to see that happening in this realm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Wim. You know, what you're letting us know, and it's really great to have you on Dream Path so that you can talk about these things in a way that is totally open and give some insights to, I'm sure, people who are listening in. And whether they're listening live or, you know, at the time or even a year from now, it's amazing how these things, these broadcasts, these recordings, the work that happens connects at different times. But it seems to be happening a little bit quicker.
Well, I'm really honored that you thought of me to have one. And I will say that this has been, you know, a different kind of interview than I've usually been able to do with anybody, because usually I have to prove myself or make myself credible. You know, I have all these phenomenal stories, and I focus on that. At the same time, I know the conference calls are a major, major importance of my work. And I know that because Jara has been on them, because she's felt the energy of them, it's opened the door to have a more freewheeling conversation about it. So I'm really glad to share that with people. And again, the major websites here are higher-vision.org and theradiantzone.com. And I hope people will avail themselves of this opportunity, which is absolutely free, going on every night of the week, to tune into these energies over their telephone.
Well, we are inviting everyone who's listening now to experience this just like we have. And that's why we're so glad to have you sharing this with us, Wim. And we'll be continuing this as we go along. And the interesting thing that this will be broadcast on the winter solstice. Familiar with...
Hey, Daphne's calling me, so okay. I'll talk to you later, okay?
Later. Bye.
Okay, thanks for that. Bye.
Boardroom to control room, boardroom to control room. There's nobody in the control room. Over. Roger. You've been listening to Dreampath tonight, and my partner is speaking to me, but I must quickly speak to you because this is the end, my friend. This is the end, mon ami. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Thank you, Winfrey. Thank you, everyone tonight that has joined us. And now the pièce de résistance, the Messiah. Listen. Listen up.